This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The new pocket of resistance to lockdown policies is not from MAGA world. It's from just trying to get by world, such as Angela Marsden, the woman who made the video out of L.A. where the Hollywood movie shoot was set up with outdoor catering, but her restaurant couldn't open, with Danny Presti, Max Public House in Staten Island. Dan Henninger writes about this in the Wall Street Journal, that the National Governors Association and the AARP have compiled state-by-state tables of coronavirus restrictions. Put it this way, there are exceptions, but if you want to live in a state without authoritarian impulses, your best bet is to move red. Beyond California and New York, Democrat governors who have imposed total bans on indoor dining include Whitmer, the Ava Perone of East Lansing up in Michigan, Tim Walz in Minnesota, of course, Jelly Belly, New Mexico's Michelle Lujan Grisham. Let it also be noted that while the minimally restrictive policies of GOP governors DeSantis in Florida, Noem in South Dakota are familiar, most states, including Kansas under Democrat Governor Laura Kelly, have tried to strike a balance between protecting public health and ensuring economic survival.
Yeah, she's using common sense and looking at the science and the data.
The states in which acts of civil disobedience and defiance are occurring are among people who don't wear MAGA hats. Their governors are called liberals, but perhaps liberalism's meaning and its political support are undergoing transition as COVID redefines the everyday understanding of individual freedom. Perhaps we'll see. I guess we'll have to see some sort of political reckoning for these lockdown governors, those with the authoritarian impulses that Henninger refers to, before it's certain that a metamorphosis is undergoing. But to his point, yesterday in New York City. That's right. There was a restaurant, employers and employees, restaurant owners and workers alike, who rallied to either reopen, allow the restaurants to reopen, or provide them some financial relief. And they most notably talked about the so-called Restaurant Act at the federal level that's been bandied about for a couple of months now, $120 billion in restaurant relief. We'll get to that. But here's a description of the situation from the one of the sort of Latino Restaurant Association representatives.
Now, two-thirds of New York restaurants said they are likely to close by the end of the year. Without a comprehensive relief package by our government, a survey of New York City Hospital Alliance also here today showed that 87% of businesses were unable to pay their full rent in August. And when conducted again just last month, 88% of business were not able to pay their full rent in October. Members of our association cite up to 80% of reduction in business compared to before the pandemic, 60 to 80% decrease in outdoor dining since the beginning of the fall. The situation continues to get more and more dire, and are shutting down our indoor dining during the holidays when New York City restaurants are providing the safety measure that working the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right, and then you heard from specific restaurateurs. I mean, just give you a couple examples of, you know, real stories. Put a human face on what's happening to some of these business owners and, by extension, their employees. This is one woman who's laid off 80% of her employees.
My dream was always to have my own business. I struggled with a corporate job for some time, saved my pennies, and finally was able to open up my own establishment. When I did, it was only 5 employees, including myself. Today, I employ 25 employees, but since COVID-19 hit, from 25, I'd had to reduce to only 4 employees. In May, I ventured out into a second establishment, right next to Il Soleil. Once COVID hit, as I said, it's been reduced to takeout and deliveries. My sales have dropped to 80%. I've been forced to release 22 of those employees, 22 families that are struggling right now, that can't pay their rent, that can't put food on their tables. We are so hopeful when indoor dining was allowed again to try to make it afloat. But now that we're unable to pay our rents due to the shutdown, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose everything altogether.
And a lot of Chicagoans can't pay their rent. I mean, the place where I get my nails done and have for 16 years, she's like, come and get us, kick us out, because we cannot, they can't even make a fourth of the rent this month.
I know.
Because of restrictions and 20% here and then 50, then back to 20. I mean, they're glad to be open and doing what they love, but this is just hell for a lot of people.
And yeah, I'm part of the Rebel Eaters group that's trying to support restaurants that are defying Governor Jelly Belly's lockdown orders in Chicagoland. And I know other people are focused on trying to help the local businesses stay afloat. I had this conversation on my syndicated show last night with the editor of Ricochet.com. And he's doing the same thing out here, John Gabriel. He's doing the same thing out Arizona way. So I know people are mindful of this, but again, it's just not enough for all of the obvious reasons. I mean, there's one example.
Right.
Now hear from a woman, and again, these are immigrants and minority business owners. I thought these were the individuals that
women
the left is so concerned about. Of course, they're not concerned about. Here's a woman, again, who built a little mini empire of 11 restaurants, 200 employees.
It breaks my heart that all this family is not going to have money, is not going to have fun to buy a Christmas gift for the kids. All the employees that I have, they have kids. All this, and the only thing that I'm asking Cuomo to please, if we're going to stay closed, to provide some funding for us. How are we going to have, how I'm going to handle all this pressure that I have? I have 11 restaurants. I have all these landlords calling me every single day, every single time, asking me when I'm going to pay my rent, what message that I have for them, what message do all my employees going to have for the landlords. Please, we need your support, everyone. We need to send the message to the right person. He need to listen to us. He need to listen to us. We want our restaurant to be open back again. We want to work.
Fight, sister.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line, that is. We'll be right back with your calls.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560. The answer.
Something else, too, before we go. We'll take your calls after the news. But listen to this from a CBS affiliate in Sacramento. Listen to what they're reporting about what they're being told as restaurants in Sacramento and throughout California, ostensibly, are being called on by code enforcement for the takeout. Somebody takes out and they eat at a public place or they eat at a bench in front of the restaurant, and then the restaurant is being said, how are you allowing outdoor dining? The restaurant is saying, I'm not allowing outdoor dining. They're coming for takeout and I can't control where they eat after that. And listen to what California public health officials are saying.
Now, we reached out to Sacramento County Public Health and we were told that restaurants should be educating their customers that food is for takeout only and should not be eaten on site. We also reached out to the state and they say that right now, COVID-19 is spreading so rapidly that it's even a risk just to step outside your home. Back to you guys.
So nobody go outside. Nobody go outside for any reason. So now we're going to eliminate the one last lifeline that these retail businesses and restaurants have, which is, you know, takeout. That's where this is going
in these
states that have authoritarians in charge.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Before the news, we were talking about the rally press conference that happened in New York City yesterday. Restaurant owners and restaurant workers alike calling, saying basically the message was, we just want to work, but if you're not going to let us work, if you're not going to let us run our businesses, then you need to compensate us. And there's the so-called Restaurants Act that has 51 co-sponsors in the Senate and some 200 co-sponsors in the House that would provide stabilization grants to cover the difference between, 2019 revenues and projected revenues for 2020, while PPP and economic injury disaster loan recipients will have to subtract forgiven loans from the maximum amount they're eligible for with respect to these restaurant stabilization grants. So it was sort of arguing the alternative, which I completely understand and is completely reasonable from their perspective. You don't have to give us money. Just let us work. If you're not going to let us work, run a business, then you have to give us money because that's a taking. And they're right about that.
And it's so goofy because they're allowing outdoor dining in New York City, but a snowstorm is coming, 12 to 18 inches. So a lot of people started taking down their outdoor structures because it's going to collapse in the snow.
And in California, where you can eat outside, cannot eat outside. And they're saying, don't even go outside. Pretend outside doesn't exist. California really is something out of a Cormac McCarthy dystopian novel now. That's remarkable. And then the idea that for the takeout business, which Gavin Newsom is so generously allowing, the restaurant is now responsible to educate customers to not eat in public spaces or in front of their restaurants, even though their outdoor dining is not officially open. Now code enforcement is going to shake them down over that.
I mean, that's all we did in the springtime because we would get food to go and then sit outside and enjoy a meal in a public park. And that, there's no constitutional rights anymore, no freedom of assembly. You can't sit in a park. That's none of their damn business.
Tom in Oswego, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. My heart goes out with the restaurant owners. We're friends with many owners out here in Oswego and Yorkville and Plainfield. But I think what we also need to talk about is small contractors. Other type of business owners. This shutdown has fingers that are going out everywhere. And I've been in business 32 years. I'm essential. My business has been strong. But I can sense through my customers there's a little unease going on right now because a lot of my customers, they're big building owners in Chicago, and their tenants aren't paying rent, which means then they don't have money to fix the building, which I do. Then I can't pay my employees, which then they can't pay their mortgage. This is a trickle-down effect. I wish somebody would ask these boneheads in politics, what's the end game here? Remember, Dan and Amy, I talked to you guys a while back and said they don't know how to get out of this. They're trapped. And the only way to do it is to just, there is no answer. And we're trapped in this now because who's going to be the first one to step off and say, okay, we're going to open it wide open? Nobody. They're afraid to do it.
So Christine Noman, South Dakota.
Stuck.
Well, he's talking about states that are locked down, rolled over by lockdown artists. Yeah,
and I hate to tell people this, but yesterday Governor Pritzker and a bunch of the governors released this PSA basically canceling Christmas. And Governor Pritzker actually said, until the virus is eradicated, eradicated. That's like saying we're going to get rid of the flu. It's never going to be eradicated. He said, until then, we cannot get back to normal. Are you kidding me? He's moving the goalposts again.
There was a woman who posted in the Reopen Illinois Schools Facebook group.
Yeah. Love those ladies, by the way. Shout out to you.
This is from Annetta Jopp, I think is her name. I just called Governor Pritzker's office to ask what the plan was for him to return Illinois to normal after we get the vaccine in the upcoming days. This is what his secretary told me. We don't have a plan yet. The governor is waiting until everyone has been vaccinated before making a decision on how to reopen. The woman said, in the governor's Restore Illinois plan, he states that we will enter into phase 5 and basically return to normal once the vaccine is developed. It says nothing about everyone receiving it. We know that it will be delivered to us as early as this past Monday. So can we expect schools, churches, restaurants, and everything else to reopen as soon as the vaccine is in Illinois? The secretary, no, I told you the governor has no plan to reopen the state as of right now. The woman, but his plan says that we will reopen fully once the vaccine is delivered. The secretary, then do whatever you want. the woman. I will call back next week then to see if the governor has decided yet what we can do with our own lives. The secretary, call him every day if you want. The governor will decide when he is ready. And then the secretary hung up on her.
See, that is sickening. At least Governor Walz, his plan today. So 3 weeks ago, he said, I'm shutting down sports temporarily. They got done with their fall season. I will get back to you in 3 weeks. 3 weeks is today. And today he's going to tell parents whether or not they're going to have winter sports, practices or games. He's a former football coach, former teacher. He knows the importance of communicating with his people. Yes, he's a Democrat, whatever. But he shut down bars and restaurants, said 3 weeks, and I will get back to you. And today's that day. We've never had an end game. We've never had a I'll get back to you next week or in 17 days or in 10 days.
Well, we have a plan, and they won't abide their own plan or explain why they're revising the plan. I understand you have to revise plans based on the circumstances on the ground, but the circumstances on the ground now were contemplated by his plan, the development and the distribution of vaccine. That's happening, so now you have to explain why the occurrence that you anticipated in your plan is not generating the response you said it would in your plan.
I really want you guys to hear this, this PSA thing. It's a, you know, montage at the beginning, but just wait for it, please.
Hi, everyone. This is Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Governor Andy Beshear.
Governor Tim Walz.
Governor J.B. Pritzker.
Governor Holcomb.
Governor Mike DeWine.
Governor Tony Evers.
Just like we did before Thanksgiving, we wanted to take a moment to urge everyone in our region to do your part to protect our families, frontline workers, and small businesses this holiday season.
This may be the most difficult time yet in our struggle with COVID-19, especially with the holidays approaching.
Until the vaccine is available to everyone, and until we eradicate this virus once and for all, we must continue working to protect one another.
The science is settled. The best way we can protect our frontline workers slow the spread of this virus is to double down on mask wearing, social distancing, and washing our hands frequently.
Yeah, actually, the science is not settled on that. And Holcomb in particular, but also DeWine, that is a terrible mistake they made in joining those lockdown and bus governors for that public service announcement. Because obviously, the situation in Indiana is very different than the situation in Illinois or any of those other states who were represented by the governors in that PSA. A terrible mistake by Eric Holcomb. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. He's also, I think that was Holcomb at the end, he's also wrong in terms of the science being settled. And it's really easy. I would ask Eric Holcomb, I don't care if he's a Republican, I don't care if he's a conservative, I don't care what anybody's party affiliation is or stated political philosophy. Real simple, Eric. I'll put the same question to you that I would put to any of these politicians or any of these doctors. Explain to me what the problem was scientifically with the Mount Sinai study on mask wearing. Explain to me what was wrong with the infirmity of the Danish study on mask wearing. Because we've had any number of experts who, even to the extent they default on mask wearing, they will not suggest that the science is settled or even that the science is particularly compelling with respect to mask wearing, even if the default position for sort of comedy purposes for you know, togetherness, political purposes, essentially, is to say, okay, let's compel the mask wearing. That's a bunch of nonsense, and Eric Holcomb should be embarrassed, and Hoosiers, who know better, should be peppering Eric Holcomb about participating in that PSA and that charade that I just heard. Absolutely. Chet and Lyle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, a couple weeks ago, you and I went back and forth saying that the school board candidacy was somewhat hopeless. First day of filing in District 204 in Naperville, 10 candidates filed. I believe there is an article in the Daily Herald that alluded that people were driven by the shutting down of the schools. So hopefully we'll see more school districts with a lot of competitive elections here in April. Thank you. Right. Have a great day.
That's an encouraging note. Thanks for the call, Chet, the update. Chris in Phoenix.
Good morning. Just got first comment is just every day is a new level of absurdity or stupidity. And I've seen where there's no liability for this vaccination that's being offered. Is that correct?
There's no liability exposure for like the pharma companies, or what do you mean?
Right. I mean, that's the understanding that I'm saying so far. And it just seems absurd than flipping.
Yes. I mean, just a clarification on that. So part of the whole processing out to these institutions, healthcare facilities and hospitals and nursing homes was having those who are going to be administered the vaccine sign waivers. So there's your sort of indemnification. But anyway, your point.
Well, it's just strange. And then flipping to the restaurant owners, they're going to have to start policing who carries out and where they eat. I mean, what if someone buys a homeless person a meal? How do you police and hold anyone responsible for that? Mm-hmm. It's just absurd. And one other point, going to your mask, as you're touching on the masks, wasn't it about a month ago that they released data showing like 71% of those infected followed rigorous guidelines, and
yes,
another 14 for the most part followed it? So
yes,
where's their science for this?
Right. Exactly. Chris. Thanks for the call. As compliance with mask wearing has increased, so have we seen the outbreaks.
Right. And since they stopped indoor dining at bars and restaurants in Chicago, the number skyrocketed, 15,000. Now we've dropped down to 7,000 again for an eighth day in a row now, which means we should be in phase four, tier two mitigation. I think that's your favorite one, Dan.
I've got a great missive from a church elder on mask wearing, who's also an EMT, that we'll get to later on in the show. But you got to hear this. It's really, really good. Carl on the south side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, this whining by all these restaurant owners and employees and everybody in all these states that are run by Democrats is falling on deaf ears. This is what you voted for. It's coming to the rest of the country, too, because we're going to have a Democrat at a national level. The virus is not COVID. The virus is freedom. You will obey or be crushed.
Thanks, Carl. Pete and Racine.
Good morning. I was going to mention one thing, but I'm going to share this. I had a meeting yesterday at church with some people, and one of my friends works in a old folks home, and she's a nurse, not just, you know, she was very upset, and so we asked what was going on, and one of the inmates, one of the people there, a man at 87 years old, was in hospice. This is in Wisconsin. He came down with COVID. They shipped him to some place here in Illinois, and Angel said that his wife was standing outside of her old folks' home with a bag waiting for a call to go see her husband, which had passed away. She said she had not touched her husband since May, and this man has died away from his wife. And if we can't figure out a way, at least when people are in hospice and things like that, the governors can't change that up. There are people that are brokenhearted that are losing family members that they're looking at through windows and things like that. It's as bad as it is for restaurants and everything else. There are major, major problems with people struggling emotionally and depression and everything else with this. Just there's got to be some let up here to give people a break with their loved ones.
Thanks for the call, Pete. You know, you don't understand. See, the more callous they are, the more they care. That's what we're to believe. That's one of the new sort of Orwellian redefinitions. You know, freedom is slavery. Well, here in 2020 America, callousness is caring.
And if Pritzker heard that man's story, you know, he'd say, this is why I'm not letting schools be reopened. This is why I'm not letting restaurants open or bars. Because I know it makes no sense. If it saves one life, Dan.
It doesn't even make sense. They're apples and oranges circumstances. A nursing home facility and a school.
Well,
Greg and Schomburg.
Their cases.
I mean, sorry, Greg and LaGrange.
Hi, good morning, guys. I just heard earlier this morning that after Christmas there's going to be a total lockdown. And the thing that gets me the most is that with these tests, we still don't know how many times they're being cycled up to detect the virus. We don't know the false positive rate. None of that's coming out. None of that science is coming out. The Johns Hopkins survey that came out and basically said deaths have been remained equal all the way through. It's just that now with the drop in other causes of death and the spike in COVID, more COVID is being attributed to.
Right, the problem there were less car accidents because in March people were locked in their houses.
I don't want to use the analogy of car accidents and other deaths. I just don't want to do that. I think it's kind of flawed in a way. We can get into that some other time. But here's the thing. At what point do you start to think that this is all about a process to break people, just to break people, to make them dependent on the state, right, Dan? Because when the cycle is, it's the takings, right? You shut us down, we need more government money. If you shut us down, we'll do it, but you got to give us more money from the state, which means we're more dependent on the state. I am so disappointed in our medical leadership in this country not to speak out against this, because it's lives versus lives, like you said, and this is what they want. What do you want? Well, you voted on November 3rd on what you wanted. Do you like it? Do you like it now? Because it's going to get a lot worse. Do you like it?
Thanks for the call, Greg.
And this just Illinois reports the lowest average COVID test positivity rate since November 4th. That's good news. Then why aren't we reopening?
I have to tell you the point that the last point Greg made about the medical community. One of my key takeaways over the last 10 months of watching this play out and listening to everybody from our guests to the TV epidemiologists and TV governors and so forth. I have now about as much faith in the hierarchy of the so-called medical community, public health, medical doctors, academics. I have about as much faith in the hierarchy, the intelligentsia in the medical community, as I do in the hierarchy of the political community, the political ruling class in this country. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hallelujah! Holy s***!
On AM 560.
Where's the Tylenol?
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's always good to enlist some common sense, even if that person is not sporting a degree in epidemiology. Our friend and economist Brian Westbury from First Trust tweeting out, okay, do I have this right? Wearing a mask keeps me from getting COVID, but getting a vaccine won't stop the need for me to wear a mask. So if that's true, that's what the doctors are saying, why should I get the vaccine?
Very good question. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636 type in DA, then a quick comment.
Nothing like running their own logic. By the way, I've got something on that too. So the vaccines are 95% effective.
Right. And the average flu shot is 52% effective. So
if it's 95% effective, but I have a 99.9% survival rate if I get infected.
Right.
So I have a 5% chance, even though I'm only got a 1/100th percent chance of actually fatality. And it's something else too. What is the incidence? Do we know yet? We probably don't. The incidence of side effects. And is the incidence of side effects from taking the vaccine higher or lower than the incidence of death from getting COVID?
That's a great question. They said, well, they did warn yesterday some local doctors that if you do get the vaccine, your employer should be prepared to possibly give you the next day off in case you have some fever or chills from the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just asking questions.
And in regards to if you get the vaccine, can you still give it to others? Nobody knows yet. They have not done any studies on that yet. So the people that were part of that vaccination group, they don't know if they spread it to anybody else if they had it.
On mask wearing, I wanted to include this because of all this, the science has settled, and it's coming from, a lot of people with medical degrees and public health degrees and who are in positions of significant status within the medical and public health community. So who is a layman like me to argue? Well, I mean, it's sort of like Brian Westbury, just asking questions based on trying to follow your logic. And if it's so compelling, then you should be able to answer my question straight away and put the issue to rest. So why can't you? Why won't you in so many cases? That's an interesting question, too. This from a friend of mine. A relative of hers got this from his church elder, who refuses to wear a mask, and was asked to explain why. He is an EMT. Brothers, at our last session meeting, somebody suggested I share the reason why I've chosen not to wear a face mask, as he thought it would be helpful for the other officers to know. I agreed and did share my thoughts on this, but not everyone had a chance to hear them. There are several areas I could comment on that have caused me concern on the mandated use of face masks normally employed in surgical theaters and emergency medicine for use now by the general population with little to no training or remediation. Among the topics I've considered are the scope of legal authority, the duty of civil disobedience, and the Christian science and empirical evidence, inductive analogical reasoning, and finally God's law. Although I have concerns relating to each of the aforementioned areas, it is God's law ultimately that compels me not to wear a face mask. There are four necessary elements that must all be fulfilled for the general public to use face masks with at least the same efficacy as professional healthcare providers. So he starts with the science. Again, EMT.
Okay.
Four necessary elements. Use of the appropriate type of masks, aseptic donning and removal of masks, aseptic hand-to-hand, hand-to-face behavior, forbearance from touching one's face while wearing the mask, in other words. And then lastly, hand washing or sanitizing before and after hand-to-face contact. Who is doing that?
No one's doing that. They're shoving the stuff in their pocket, and then with their dirty hands, after they touch something, they take out the mask, put it back on their face. I mean, I told you, a lot of people are getting bacterial pneumonia from wearing dirty masks because you're supposed to wash them or throw them out every single use.
And we're happy to just do the signaling. I mean, bandanas and so forth are still acceptable. And everyone concurs. All these same medical professionals concur that provides no protection.
Well, now people are using winter scarves, and they think that that's a mask.
Same deal.
That's the same thing.
So back to the letter. As most who have either tried to wear a mask or have observed others wearing masks can attest, the above requirements of publicly mandated mask wearing are not tenable for pragmatic reasons, as well as proclivity to touch one's face when wearing something that makes it itch or irritated. The consequences of septic mask donning behavior by the public are very serious. What I do see in public is most people auto-contaminating themselves by touching their face an estimated 10 times more than people without masks. They do this because masks itch and are uncomfortable. People sweat, their breath condenses, and the condensant runs down their face. They reach up to pinch the mask by their nose and mouth, where a concentrated quantity of pathogens would accumulate. They also touch the periphery of the mask to make positional adjustments. Potential pathogenic secretions are surely condensed from exhaled breath and sweat around the periphery of the mask, all of this with poor hand hygiene to boot. My position is that if a mask is used appropriately, it may help slow the spread of COVID-19 and all other pathogens from the host. It may. If a mask is used inappropriately, it may accelerate the spread of COVID-19 and all other pathogens from the host. We need to keep in mind that COVID-19 is not the only pathogen people carry and share. We love our neighbors and don't want to do anything to increase risk of infection in our community. Our God requires complete, not partial or selective obedience in how we care for our neighbor. This means making a good faith effort to care for our brother in all things, not just COVID-19. If we, in order to comply with the magistrate's directive, chose to fixate on one and only one way to love and protect our neighbor, our love for our neighbor is not biblical. Partial obedience is disobedience. As for our duty to the magistrate, if we only follow the mass directive and as far as we are comfortable or agree with it, but not fully, incomplete obedience is disobedience to the civil magistrate. I believe most, including Christians, incompletely follow the mass directive. Of course they do. The Sixth Commandment demands that we not only forbear from murder, but that we do everything in our power to prevent harm from coming to our neighbor. This includes disobeying the magistrate if what he requires causes us to put our neighbor at risk of harm. I am compelled by conscience to not wear a mask, as it is foreseeable that the casual use of masks puts my neighbor at greater risk of infection for all infectious pathogens, not just COVID-19. I must obey God over the magistrate in this case.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA than a quick comment. That's funny. That was a wonderfully written piece, and it's true. But the people that don't wear masks that we know, the two doctors on my street, I never, ever, ever have seen them outside with a mask on. Ever. Because I don't wear it, because there's only three. It just happens to be the doctors on the street. And I approached one. She's a gynecologist. I said, why not? And she said, I don't need to. I'm outside, and I wear one all day.
Well, take the combination of the science and the thoughtfulness of that church elder and thinking mm-hmm. about your duty as a Christian to your neighbor to heart, because it's more than just sort of – he's not just arguing ineffectiveness. He's not just arguing auto-contamination. He's not just describing what we all see with respect to mask wearing and why the whole thing is little more than performance art. He's also suggesting that it is a failure to do what the virtue signaling say they're doing. I say I'm being other regarding by following the magistrate's directive. In point of fact, I'm not, am I? If you follow his logic. There's a lot of logic you have to suspend to dutifully comply with these magistrate's directives, isn't there? Chip in St. Charles.
Common sense and intelligence tells you that wearing a mask is it's counterproductive, but it's not about wearing the mask to help people. It's about power. The government wants you wearing a mask. I wonder how many businesses are being put out of business just because people don't want to wear a mask to go out. I don't want to go to Lowe's or Home Depot or anything like that. I order stuff online because I don't want to wear a mask when I go out because it insults my intelligence. And J.D. Pritzker can do whatever he wants, but people know. And you know what? If you're not smart enough to know that wearing a mask is counterproductive, go ahead and wear your mask, and that way we'll know who you are.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Chip. I mean, it's not just intelligence, right, or the lack thereof. It's, I just want to go along. I don't want to be ostracized. You got all these people with all these titles and all these credentials saying this is what you must do. Who am I? And then everybody falls in line, and then it's like, well, the peer pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Mask shaming, yes.
Some of us never grew up from the lunchroom or the playground. We want to be part of the clique. We don't want to be on the outside looking in. I don't want people to say that I'm the one. I can't stand up for myself. I can't stand and deliver with respect to my neighbor. I can't make a thoughtful argument like that church elder did and provide that intelligent, measured, substantive pushback. No. It's just easier just to wear the mask and go along. No, I mean, if I'm in somebody else's home or place of business, I'm not going to pick a fight. As I've said in this show before, somebody I have to go into,
grocery store.
Well, I'm saying that hypothetically because I've never gone into a grocery store. Well, not in the last 20 years. But if I did, I'm not going to say, no, I'm not going to wear a mask and I'm going to make a big spectacle of myself. That's not Christian either. And I don't want to do that. I'm not looking for a fight. But to the extent that you're in a conversation with somebody and you're just going to go along with something that you know doesn't stand up to scrutiny, something that you know is illogical because it's just easier to do so, well, there's nothing redeemable about that.
And I always wear masks, too, if I'm near elderly people because they're the ones who are mostly dying from this, not the young people.
Well, that's interesting, but it's the same dynamic. Why is it any different? You either believe that that's something that's effective or you don't. Now, if the elderly person says, would you please put on a mask because it makes me feel more comfortable, fine. But I'm not going to pretend I'm protecting that person. Because if I was protecting that person, then I do it all the time. So which is it? Follow your own logic. You either believe this or you don't. You're either following the science and asking the questions or you're not. You either believe that mostly what we're doing is auto-contaminating because of the way that masks are worn. There's, what percentage of the population is following sort of mask protocol that is consistent with being in a surgical theater? 1 in 1 million?
That's true.
So then what are you doing? You're just saying, I want to make you feel more comfortable. Fine. But understand what you're doing and don't say it's something that other than what it is. Because then otherwise you're just perpetuating the ignorance. Tony in Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan, Amy. Amy, I don't mean to question your logic, but, well, actually I do. If Pritzker is shutting things down and the case rates are going down, I mean, then he's going to claim that it's working. You're kind of, I think you're saying the opposite when you're posing your.
Well, no. When we were at our height was 7 days after they shut down all the bars and restaurants because people were being driven into their homes where that is where the spread is happening inside people's homes.
But it's coming down now. He's going to say it's because of the lockdown.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of
when it's going when things are going well, it's his doing, and when it's things aren't going well, it's the public's fault. It's all our fault.
I just say it's the language. That's all. Anyway,
okay.
You
made a good point. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony. Matt in South Bend, congratulations on your former mayor getting that cabinet nomination, Matt.
Well, I just proud. Think he was blessed. Yes, I'm very proud of him and thinking that, he can coattail somebody over there to China and not really into that. Actually, this weekend we went out caroling for church people shut-ins, and it was so refreshing and so warm, heartfelt. We got many honks as people drove by, and it's just the people need to be together, and church folks, a lot of the older folks weren't wearing masks coming out from their home, but we were wearing masks, and I felt it was very invigorating, very stimulating, and we're missing it. So,
very good.
Yeah, prayers to everybody. Holidays.
Thanks, Matt.
Oh, I want to ask you about your public transportation system. It's going to prepare Pete Buttigieg.
Everybody knows South Bend's public transportation infrastructure is the envy of the world. There's no question.
Smart streets are there. Smart streets are there. That's for sure.
Yeah. All
okay.
Right. Thanks
thank
for the
you.
Call, Matt.
They're singing Christmas carols in Indiana.
I wonder how many members of Notre Dame's faculty participated. The great Catholic university that it is. Judy in Hobart, Indiana.
Yes, hi, Dan. After just listening to what you read, you know, and they keep saying we wonder why there's an upsurge, maybe it is because more people are wearing masks now and auto-contaminating themselves and others.
Mm-hmm. And also,
because we're wearing more now than we did in the winter, you know, last winter.
Right. Thanks for the call, Judy. And it's also sort of like Linus's blanket. I mean, it's a security blanket, but it gives you a false sense of security because you've been told that the mask is the panacea. And as Brian Westbury pointed, right. So if the mask is a panacea, if it's a force field around me, then what's all this vaccine business? Right. I don't need a vaccine. Because based on what you say, if I just wear a mask for the rest of my life, then I'm immune. Yeah. Right? Isn't that right? Do I have the logic right? Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and what would L. Ron Hubbard do if he saw two members of a film crew standing within 2 meters of each other on the set of the latest in the Mission Impossible franchise?
Please tell me there is plexiglass between them.
Tom Cruise is having none of it. He is the wingnut holding Hollywood together, and he took out after two members of some 50-person film crew that's filming Mission Impossible over in the UK. And this is what he had to say.
Oh, no.
Epic Tom Cruise rant.
We are the gold standard. You're back there in Hollywood making movies right now because of us. Because they believe in us and what we're doing. I'm on the phone with every studio at night. Insurance companies, producers, and they're looking at us and using us to make their movies. We are creating thousands of jobs, you I don't ever want to see it again. Ever. And if you don't do it, you're fired. And I see you do it again, you're gone. And anyone on this crew does it. That's it. and you too, and you too, and you, if you ever do it again. That's it. No apologies. You can tell it to the people that are losing their homes because our industry is shut down. It's not going to put food on their table or pay for their college education. That's what I speak with every night. In the future of the industry. So I'm sorry, I'm beyond your apologies. I have told you, and now I want it. And if you don't do it, you're out.
All right already, dude.
We are not shutting this movie down. Is it understood? If I see it again, you're gone. And so are you. So you're going to cost him his job. And I see it on the set, you're gone. And you're gone.
You get a car.
That's it. Am I clear? Do you understand what I want? Do you understand the responsibility that you have? Because I will deal with your reason. And if you can't be reasonable, and I can't deal with your logic, you're fired. That's it. That is it.
I got the memo.
I trust you guys to be here.
No, nice time. Family.
That's it.
Is that it?
Are you sure?
That's it, guys.
That's it. That's it, and that's it.
Oh, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
You know, it's really rich when somebody says, if I can't follow your logic. Mr. Cruz, I'm having trouble following the logic of a guy who prays to this fictional galactic dictator that L. Ron Hubbard invented. I understand. I miss the fun-loving, risky business Tom Cruise. What happened to that guy, huh?
Oh,
okay.
Your favorite rant, though? What's your favorite?
Well, I mean, so you heard the COVID rant about people not being 2 meters apart. You know, they're on the metric system
over there.
In the UK. So it's everything's in meters. But yeah, 2 meters apart. These couple of guys were within 2 meters looking at a computer screen, probably making sure the shot looked good.
Right.
But anyway,
that's what you have to collaborate on a film and work together. But
well, I mean,
don't they all get tested?
You're an experienced actress because of that appearance in U.S. Marshals, so you know how this all works. You know,
I do.
You give us behind the scenes on you know,
well, there's a lot
what
of, you know,
Tom Cruise is feeling.
Well, you know, there's a lot of closeness. I guess after every take, the director, the cinematographer, everyone looks in the screen together. They, you know, in each other's space. But I'm sure they had masks on and things. So please.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to relax.
Yeah, he's pretty
uptight.
Pretty tightly wound about this COVID regulations and getting this film made and holding up the film industry. He feels a lot of pressure. You know, he's got to talk to Hollywood studios. He's got to talk to insurance companies every day, and he doesn't need a couple of yahoos being within 2 meters of one another looking at a computer screen.
He's going to ruin it for everybody.
He's not having it. That's it. All right. So now, you know, now you have to put this in context of epic rants because there's so much competition. We need to get to Larry O'Donnell on the board too. But let's
that's my favorite. Stop the hammering.
Start with some of our favorites, just because it's entertaining and we need a little entertainment now. Let's stay in Hollywood and this Christian Bale classic from the set of Terminator Salvation.
Okay.
Somebody walked in, you know, to check the lighting while he was doing a scene, and you don't interrupt Christian Bale when he's acting.
Take your f***ing I want you off f***ing set, you f***ing. Now, don't just be sorry. Think for one second. What the f*** are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I walk around and rip that? No, shut Do I want? No. No. Don't shut me up. Am I going to walk around and rip down in the middle of a scene? Then walking right through. Like this in the background. What the is it with you? What don't you understand? You got any idea about, hey, it's distracting having somebody walking up behind Bryce in the middle of the scene? Give me a answer. What don't you get about it?
I was looking at the light.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you really need to hear the unedited version of Christian Bale. You know, it's not for terrestrial radio here. We want to keep our FCC license. But, yeah, the full 3 to 4 minute rant uncut is really what you want to hear. But that's a good one. So there's two entries. There's your Tom Cruise and your Christian Bale.
Gotta get to the best one.
Well, I mean, well. I think we disagree on the best one. So let's go now. Come to Chicago, and one of the classic rants of all time.
Coach.
No, I think it's actually more classic than the coach. Any of the coach's rants, but it's Lee Elia talking about Cubs fans in 1983.
I'll tell you one fucking thing. I hope we get fucking hotter than just to stuff it up them 3,000 fucking people that show up every fucking day. Because if they're the real Chicago f***ing fans, they can kiss my f***ing ass right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My f***ing ass. What the f*** am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my f***ing players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the f***ing nickel-dime people to show up? The motherfuckers don't even work. That's why they're out at the f***ing game. They ought to go out and get a f***ing job and find out what it's like to go out there and a f***ing living.
Like 85%
of the f***ing world's working. The other 15 come out here. A f***ing playground for the f***ers. Rip them motherfuckers. Rip them f***ers like the f***ing players. Got guys busting their f***ing ass and them f***ing people boo. And that's the Cubs? My f***ing ass.
It's too bad Lee Elia is not the manager of the Cubs today because he wouldn't have to worry about fans. So actually, COVID is the perfect dynamic for Lee Elia to manage, and then you don't have fans in the stands giving Leon Durham a tough time. So that's a Lee Elia classic. I like that one as well. Of course, Mike Ditka, so many to choose from. This is a personal favorite of mine.
I'm happy for Steve, and I told him I'm proud of him. I tell you what, he's always like a forgotten man. Shut up.
What about the black people?
Here, have a quarter, make a phone call. Get your mouth shut. Get your mouth shut, jerk. Dickus. See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
Zero.
All the turnovers.
No, I'd rather talk to him.
Mike, get the
I know I'm smarter than that some. shut up.
All right, so you got your Tom Cruise, you got your Christian Bale, you got your Lee Elia, you got your Mike Ditka. Another from the sports world. I mean, no discussion of rants is complete without Earl Weaver.
Okay.
The great Baltimore manager. This is Earl Weaver, Manager's Corner. I think we've probably played this before. You don't really, again, another one of these guys, you don't really get the full flavor for it until you hear it uncut, so we're doing the best we can here. But Earl Weaver, Manager's Corner, responding to letters from fans, you know, some 35 years ago. And the best thing is this Baltimore Orioles announcer, Tom Moore, just completely deadpan as Earl Weaver is just going on the most profane graphic rants in response to relatively innocuous, straightforward questions from the old mailbag.
Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all the time.
Well, Terry Crowley's lucky he's in f***ing baseball, for Christ's sake. He was released by the Cincinnati Reds. He was released by the f***ing Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his f***ing ass for 8 innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fan, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in the f***ing ninth. So if this f***er mind his own business and let me manage the f***ing team, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, certainly you've made your opinions known on the fans' questions about baseball, Earl, but let's get to something else. Alice Sweet from Norfolk wants to know the best time to put in a tomato plant.
Alice Sweet ought to be worried about where the f*** her next lay's coming from rather than where her next f***ing tomato plant's coming from. If she'd get her ass out to f***ing bars at night and go hustling around the street, she might get a f*** stuck in her once in a while. I don't understand where these questions are coming from, Tom. That's about it from Manager's Corner. Go f*** yourself and the f*** with your show coming up next on the Baltimore Oriole Baseball f***ing Network.
Orioles must have been going through a bit of a rough stretch during that episode of Manager's Corner.
Did he keep his job after that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, oh, it was that's before there was political correctness.
It was a different time.
Different time.
It was
there.
A different time.
Many
of the sports greats probably wouldn't have had careers.
No.
Were they living in today's world? That's no question. And we didn't even get to Bobby Knight, and you tried to pull a Bobby Knight classic. Game Face is always a good one.
Yeah.
Eduardo Midway here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before I get to my comment, Lee Ilya is my candidate for Illinois governor.
Lee Ilya is? I believe he's passed on, but I mean that doesn't stop you from voting. So why be holding office? Sure.
I was going to comment. A lot of these Hollywood people are moving to Australia because of the corona. I was checking this out on Daily Mail.
They're moving to Australia.
They're
altogether.
Moving. Yeah, right. Due to the corona. Yeah.
Or Florida. Thanks for the call, Eduardo. Tom in Deer Park.
Yes, Dan and Amy, would it surprise either of you that the Lee Ilya rant was the unemployed Cub fans, was directed at season ticket holders that were traders at the exchange and actually had nothing better to do than to go to Cub games after work and get on Lee Ilya's case every day?
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. No question. No question. Jake in Waukegan.
I think Tom Cruise was auditioning for the next biopic on the aforementioned Coach Knight. They'll just have to add about 6 or 7 inches to him. Or if you want to put it into contemporary time, you know, he could probably, you know, portray the next biopic of Rahm Emanuel. The serious question that I have, though, is why do people like Tom Cruise, Christian Bale, you know, the Hollywood elite, they can get away with going on these nasty, you know, rants where they can just tear people down. But you have a college basketball coach or a football coach, you know, drop a couple of choice words criticizing a ref, and they get fined because it's not sportsmanlike.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jake. I do like the idea. Maybe Tom Cruise in the Earl Weaver story and Christian Bale
is Bobby Knight,
or does the biopic on the coach?
Oh yeah.
You know he can lose a lot of weight to be in the fighter. Maybe
right,
gain some weight, and you know the way you shoot it, he can be a bigger guy. He needs to be the coach. I like it, but it's always fun to hear rants from some of your betters and many of your lessers. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh my God!
An AM 560.
Santa here? I know him.
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This is not getting nearly the play that it deserves, which is why this show exists, to ensure these things are not missed. Everybody focusing on dissecting Biden's post-electoral college vote speech, and then Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor yesterday congratulating the president-elect Joe Biden and the vice president-elect Kamala Harris. And we're supposed to get into a big to-do about the terminology, and rather than just let the dates play out as the dates are set, as they are playing out. The call, the Zoom call this week, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris on the call as well.
Yeah.
And these self-styled black civil rights leaders, which are just black race identity hustlers with titles that put Joe Biden up, NAACP, honchos, and the like. Left-wing black activists, you know, like the good Reverend Raphael Warnock down in Georgia, the pro-choice reverend, the reverend who compares Republicans who vote for tax cuts to King Herod murdering children to get to Christ. Real, truly, truly. And we have the audio. But this call is remarkable because of Joe Biden trying to out race hustle the race hustlers who put him up and getting a little testy that he would be questioned by these individuals. You know,
dare you approach me that way kind of attitude?
If you're black and you don't vote for Joe Biden, you ain't black. Remember? And if you're black and you question Joe Biden, then you ain't black. Then, well, in Joe Biden's words, the hell with y'all.
But it's like when I named it, well, I don't know if that counts. I'm not so sure. Well, if it doesn't count for y'all, well, the hell with y'all. But because it's real. It's real. So all I'm saying is look at us, judge us based on what we do.
I love the Delaware colloquialism, too.
Well, corn pop's coming out, you know.
Doesn't work for y'all, then the hell with y'all. This is like Hillary Clinton at the Edmund Pettus Bridge channeling James Cleveland. I ain't no ways tired. That's not patronizing, though.
Not at all.
Don't think of that for
it's
a second.
Form of solidarity. I'm with you.
And
I
look,
talk like that.
Joe Biden doesn't have time for the NAACP's Derek Johnson.
Because the success of this administration will be the ability of the Senate to confirm your nominees. We have an opportunity here. And we want to make sure we seize upon this opportunity and allowing for the input necessary. 10 more appointments to go. A lot of people in our community are getting a little anxious because they are not seeing enough of the progress they thought they would have seen at this point. Let's not disappoint them, and let's not get to a place where voters in Georgia begin to second guess.
Okay, let me respond. I've got to go. Let me respond. There's a lot to respond to here. Let's get something straight. You shouldn't be disappointed. What I've done so far is more than anybody else has done this far. Okay? Number one.
NAACP General Counsel Sherrilyn Ifill is up next. Sherrilyn Ifill is dutiful, and she's playing her part. She was on with Rachel Maddow last week. We played it agreeing with Rachel Maddow that Trump campaign officials should be put in prison. She's an officer of the court for daring to challenge the election in a legal way through courts of law. But okay. But she's on board with the whole program. But, you know, they want more, too. And he's not taking it from Sherrilyn Ifill either.
Extended the Voting Rights Act for 25 years as a United States senator. Before, Sherrilyn, you were even involved.
Ah. What have you done for me lately, Sherrilyn Ifill, while I'm out there busting my hump for black Americans, right?
You're on notice.
You know who Joe Biden is? He'll tell you who he is.
You've never seen me shy away. In the middle of the debate, I called him a racist. In the middle of the debate with him, I took on white supremacists. I'm the guy that took on every single time somebody was threatened in this country. The only white boy you know who did it, period, out there. Every single time. So look, all I'm saying here is, guys and ladies, we're on the same exact page. The same exact page.
The only white boy out there battling white supremacy. Is that right? The only white boy who had the courage to call Trump a racist. Everyone on the left has called him a racist, and you were just the last man standing. Everyone on the left who was running for president would have been happy to be in your position and call him a racist on stage, too, however illegitimately, just as you did.
That's cringeworthy.
Oh, he's not done.
Oh, no.
Look.
This is so uncomfortable.
Hey, guys and gals. Oh. He did you a favor.
It ain't worth the job if I can't say what I believe. I didn't want to run this time. I ran this time because of the racist son of a gun who was president of the United States of America. That's why I ran.
So just say thank you and be satisfied with what you get. I got to say, these are wildly entertaining exchanges for me because there's no white hat in this story. Okay. It's not like, oh, how dare he do this? No. And Joe Biden isn't standing up to identitarianism either. Don't fall for that. This is a race hustler in Joe Biden telling the race hustlers who put him up, hey, mind your manners. There's nothing redeeming from either side in those exchanges. But it's just so delicious. I mean, this is the snake eating the tail of identitarian politics because that snake, meaning Joe Biden, has so many mouths to feed, so many tails to eat. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Rabbi Shmuel Klatskin. Rabbi, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
A pleasure to be back with you again, both of you.
You don't have to adopt my view on that, but I wanted to get your reaction to those exchanges between Joe Biden and some of the heads of the NAACP and other allies of Joe Biden and the left.
Well, Amy put it very well, calling it cringeworthy, but I've found Biden has delivered on cringeworthy statements consistently for many, many years, beginning when I remember first paying attention to him at the Bork hearings, but I was recently reviewing the way that he handled Menachem Begin, the Prime Minister of Israel, when he was before Biden on the Foreign Affairs Committee back in the early 80s, and plenty of cringeworthy stuff back then too. So it's a great theme in the gentleman from Delaware's political career.
Well, and you've written recently about the idolatry of identity politics, and I mean, it seems to me that this is a wonderful real-world case study in exactly that. I mean, both sides hold identity politics, identitarianism up as their idols, and they're just arguing about who's doing more to advance it.
Well, idolatry is appropriate because, I mean, the human identity is set up by Genesis to be a sacred thing. What's at the core of the human being, as Genesis 1 puts it, is the divine image. And this way that people who are after power try to get at the deepest things and make them controllable, make them buyable and sellable, make them to be tokens for power, is perverting the deepest things that we have in who we are. And so idolatry is correct. It's not just idolatry in worshiping another god, but it's in perverting that divine image that's the core of who each and every human being is into something that is far less than what it is. It's a deep sin, and there are consequences to messing with it.
Another real example to make this concrete for people. This from the Claremont United Methodist Church that gets a pub every year around the time of Hanukkah and Christmas, because they do these nativity scenes where they make political statements. Last year was Jesus and Mary and Joseph and Mary and baby Jesus in a cage to protest supposed Trump immigration policies. This year, it's a whole Black Lives Matter nativity scene, and I just the sort of intellectual gymnastics you have to do to make identitarian politics make sense, where one aphorism runs into the other and there's no actual thinking going on. The person who created the display this year is a gentleman named Gennaro Cordova, who's the church's groundkeeper. This is in Claremont, California. And he said that he understands that some people might be put off by Black Lives Matter and all the I Can't Breathe and Am I Next and all these other messages that are associated with the nativity scene. But he hopes it prompts discussion about how people can better understand the issue. Quoting him, "Some people comment to me, why just black people matter? And I say, of course everyone matters, but at this time we just want to say that black Americans matter. We need to be united and not see only our differences first." So by focusing on race, we're uniting and not seeing our differences first.
The gymnastics, as you put it, can be amazing. It's a real yoga position that one can get into over it. I mean, the point is, of course, that there can be a real germ and kernel of truth inside all of these things. People have something to speak about, but when you get it into the hands of people who are willing to distort it and put it outside of what it truly can mean for all of us, and use it as a tool to bring more power in their way, then we lose the ability to have a real discussion anymore. We start spouting these slogans, hands up, don't shoot, where there's no truth at the core of it. When there are issues to discuss, there are issues around which all Americans showed they could unite. We saw that last summer. There was things in which 95% of people agreed, but that was quickly taken over by people, by the hustlers of identity, by the perverters of identity, to really push the idea of identity off from that place where we are all together, to bring it to an advantage of a few, and not really care very much about what it means to everyone else.
What do you think? Oh, no. Continue, sorry.
I'm listening.
Oh, no. Awkward moment. What do you think the future is of the Black Lives Matter movement now that, you know, President-elect Biden and Kamala Harris will not sit down and talk to them? They were demanding meetings, and they're not going to do that.
I hope we can get to a real discussion instead of what's passed for it. People yelling past each other with their slogans and thinking that that's sufficient to deal with who we are as Americans in our particularity and in our universality. I hope we get somewhere better. I think there's going to be a lot of disillusionment, as there usually is when there's buyer's remorse. And maybe we can get a real discussion going. That's my hope.
Well, I think it's well-placed hope because it would be difficult. It would take real work to get to a more idiotic place we are in the discussion than present, it seems to me. And I'll tell you what, and the same goes for religious liberty, but for the Supreme Court. Yesterday, the Supreme Court, building on its decision in the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn v. Cuomo, issued an unsigned order siding with the Colorado Church in one case, and a Catholic priest and a rabbi in New Jersey and the other, sending back those cases to lower federal courts, instructing them to inform their holding on restrictions on religious liberty, inform their restrictions on religious liberty, I should say, with a court's decision in that case versus Andrew Cuomo. I just want to get your reaction to religious liberty, particularly in this holy holiday season, how thin that line is, because if it was left to the politicians, they would be adopting, it seems to me, the Governor Ralph KKK Northam position of, hey, you don't need to be in the pews in order to worship. Hey, you don't need to be in the synagogue in order to worship somebody who's obviously not a person of faith. Otherwise, they would recognize the folly of such a statement.
Well, it's not that I believe they are people of faith. They're not willing to say what it is because it's so different and than others. And it would give up their pretense that they're somehow ruling from a place above religious commitment. No, it's a very specific kind of faith that they have, and they want that to be the established religion. But you can't say that out loud. But I'm so happy about the Supreme Court. It's going to be, I think, one of the great accomplishments of the administration, much as maybe the one-term presidency of John Adams might be best remembered for having put in Marshall there and having an enduring legacy through Marshall's rulings. But there's no more fundamental freedom than the freedom of religious liberty, and I am deeply, deeply encouraged by the way that this court has voted so strongly in consistency in its short amount of time with the newest justice here on the issues that really matter to certainly to me, and I think to so many Americans. I'm encouraged.
He is Rabbi Shmuel Klatskin, Associate Rabbi of the Chabad of Greater Dayton, Ohio, and adjunct professor at Antioch University and Senior Editor of Curriculum at JLI. Rabbi Klatskin, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
A great pleasure always.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I want Christmas. Just give me plain baby Jesus lying in a manger. Christmas.
On AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity. This afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Just 11 days after Hewlett Packard Enterprise, part of the firm that created Silicon Valley in 1939, announced it was moving its headquarters from San Jose, California to Houston, Texas.
Oh, good for them.
Oracle. Larry Ellison's Oracle announced its headquarters had been moved to Austin, Texas from Redwood City, California. They'll keep a footprint in Redwood City, but the headquarters has moved to Austin, Texas, while Larry Ellison is moving to that island he bought in Hawaii out of California. Hawaii, not exactly the low-tax state, but still more attractive to Ellison than California. And this comes after Elon Musk parachuting out of California, at least personally, to Texas. It comes after other entrepreneurs like Palantir's Lonsdale moved from California as well. So the migration, when is it going to happen? When is it all going to collapse? Well, it doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time, and that's what's happening to big blue state America. You think California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, but those states in particular where there is a mass exodus.
New York City, they're not getting those residents back either. And de Blasio said after Christmas he's shutting everything down if numbers don't improve.
Well,
completely down. No gym, like everything shut down. That was his threat this morning.
Well, and this is the...
going to help get the people back.
This is the point of Dan Henninger's piece of the resistance. The resistance is largely occurring in big blue states. It's largely coming from people that are not donning MAGA hats and making a political statement. They're making a survival statement. That's what happened in New York City yesterday, where there was a big rally/press conference held by New York City restaurateurs as well as workers. It was sizable, and it was, the representatives there represented tens of thousands of restaurants and hundreds of thousands of restaurant employees. And this is what one of the individuals present had to say. This is somebody who represents, from an association perspective, Latino restaurateurs and nightclub owners.
Now, two-thirds of New York restaurants said they are likely to close by the end of the year. Without a comprehensive relief package by our government, a survey of New York City Hospital Alliance also here today showed that 87% of businesses were unable to pay their full rent in August. And when conducted again just last month, 88% of business were not able to pay their full rent in October. Members of our association cite up to 80% of reduction in business compared to before the pandemic. 60 to 80% decrease in outdoor dining since the beginning of the fall. The situation continues to get more and more dire, and are shutting down our indoor dining during the holidays when New York City restaurants are providing the safety measure that working the straw that broke the camel's back.
That's the last straw, he says. Well, so what should be done? I mean, they were very clear in saying, we want to work, but if you're not going to allow us to work, and you're not going to allow us to run our businesses, then you have to compensate us. Then you have to pass the Restaurant Act and provide $120 billion in relief to restaurants and restaurant workers to begin with. And then, if you want to provide relief to other businesses you've shut down, whether it's on Broadway, the theater, the arts and entertainment sector, and other places, airlines, then fine. But we're looking out for our own interests because that's what we're compelled to do. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, and author of Trumponomics. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. Good morning. And I've been listening to your conversation. And, I got to tell you, for the last 32 years, as you know, Dan, because we usually get together, the Moore family treks from Northern Virginia to Chicago, and we stay on the Miracle Mile. And we have a great time. It's one of the most festive and, though we love the decorations and the shops and the restaurants, and we're not coming this year. Apparently everything is shut down. And this is just a national tragedy. I have smoke coming out of my ears. I'm so angry right now. It is one thing for these governors and mayors to shut down their businesses back in March and April when the virus first hit, and we didn't. And by the way, I was totally opposed to that at the time. But you could make an argument: hey, we got to do this to stop the spread of the virus, and for a few weeks. And we now have crystal clear evidence that none of that worked. Right? None of it worked whatsoever. It is, as I like to say, it didn't flatten the curve of the virus, but it did flatten every small business in America. And here we are, 9 and 10 months later, and these idiots, these lunatics, these crazy politicians are doing exactly the same thing. The small business sector is getting crushed. Half of all restaurants in these states are looking at bankruptcy. And for what? For what? First of all, we're adults. We're a free society. The idea that these, in many cases, unelected officials can tell us what we can and can't do and when we can go into a restaurant, when we can go to the park, and when our schools are open, and this thing, it is I'm just, you know what I'm also angry about, Dan and Amy? Why are people taking this? Are we a bunch of lambs? I mean, there should be people in the street, you know, not rioting like the left
peaceful
does.
Peaceful disobedience.
Peacefully protesting these outrageous abuses of power that have nothing to do with. I just think these governors and mayors like to exercise power just for the sake of it.
Oh, they love the attention. Some of them, you know, our health department director, she's never gotten attention like this in her lifetime. And she's enjoying
this way too
much.
Was she elected to anything?
No.
I mean, who gives me, these are just officious. You know, I don't know about your health official in Illinois, but I don't know if you've been reading the story about in Pennsylvania. This is a great story. The health official is shutting down everything she can get her hands on. She isn't even a health. You know what her degree is? She's a sociologist. And you know what she gets paid? $400,000 a year. I mean, and she's just this unelected bureaucrat who's acting like, you know, Cruella de Vil, and nobody's stopping her. I mean, that's the thing, you know, Dan, I'm frustrated about. Why are American people taking this?
I don't know. And then our governor moved the goalposts again yesterday, saying now we have to eradicate COVID. At first, you know, we'll go to phase 5 plan when there's a vaccine. Well, there is a vaccine. It started, you know, being administered yesterday. And now he's saying everyone has to be vaccinated and COVID has to be eradicated. That is not going to happen. That's like saying you're going to get rid of the flu or the cold.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
always going to be around. Exactly. It's always going to be part of our society, so we have to learn to live with it.
Do you know, you guys know what location is the number one spreader of the virus?
Home.
Almost half of all cases. You know what percentage of people get the coronavirus in restaurants?
Less than 2%.
2%. 2%. I mean, these are the idiots who talk about science, Dan. Aren't they the ones who throw science in our face? We have to do this for the science. If you're not for this, you're a science denier. The science is clear about this. Number one, lockdowns do not stop the spread of the disease. You know, Japan, by the way, did you know Japan never locked down? I mean, it had some modest, you know, restrictions. But almost no one has died of the coronavirus in Japan. You know, they have the lowest death rate virtually in the world, and they never shut down. So, you know, you look at internationally, you look at the states that have the highest death rate. By the way, the other thing is, if you looked at the 10 states that are, moved towards mostly or completely locked down, it's Illinois, it's California, it's Michigan, it's Rhode Island, it's Oregon, California, and Washington State. I might have missed one or two. You know what every one of those states has in common?
Democratic socialist governor.
And why you guys don't realize in Chicago, because, you know, you're there, you know, in Chicago, is that half of the states are not shut down. Florida is open for business. Tennessee is open for business. Texas is open for business.
Well, Indiana right next door is open for business, too. I mean, you know.
What's that?
Yes. I said Indiana right next door is open for business largely, too. So, yes, I get it. But here's the trick bag they have us in, and this was illustrated by that rally press conference with restaurateurs in New York City yesterday.
Yeah,
they want to work. If you let us go back to work, we'll go back to work, and that'll be the end of it. But if you're not going to, and that's their intent, then you know you have to. That's a taking, and you have to compensate us. You have to give us a lifeline. So we want this $120 billion Restaurant Act passed. And so you know, as a free market guy, I mean, how do you argue with that proposition by the restaurateurs? It's difficult to argue with. I don't want to use them the way the left uses them as sort of means to political ends. I don't want to, you know, make an example of them. We're going to let your businesses be taken by the government so that, you know, it really resonates just how evil the government is, just how uninterested in your livelihoods they are. But we're going to have to make an example of you to drive that point home. I don't want to use them as the means to political ends. So what do you say to them?
First of all, most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, don't want a welfare check. They want to work. They want to
right.
get back on the job.
That's what these restaurateurs said, too.
Yeah,
but if you won't let me, then what do I do?
I know. I just wanted to get that out there. You know, Americans want to work. We
yes.
are a can-do society. We're not a can't-do society. Number two, that's only going to help some of the businesses. Dan, I mean,
well, I know.
Spending government money, that's the frustration. Okay, so you can help some of the businesses. Others aren't going to get help. A lot of these small businesses are just too small to really be even. They don't know how to register for all this government money. They've never done that kind of thing before. We have the vaccine. We got to get that out. And we have to let Americans make their own decisions about this. Now, if we're going to do an aid package, if we are, and I'm opposed to it, but if we do it, the money should go to the businesses and the workers, and not one penny should go to Pritzker, not one penny should go to Lightfoot, not one penny should go to Cuomo. All of these, you know, states are now, you know, it's the old story of the, you know, child who kills his parents and then, you know, throws himself on the mercy of the court saying he's an orphan. They created the crisis, and now they want the federal government to rush in. And I've said it 100 times in your show. I'll say it again. It is not fair to Texas. It is not fair to Tennessee. It's not fair to Utah and Nebraska. They have to pay federal taxes to make up for the mistakes that your governor and your mayor have made. I don't know how you all feel about it.
I agree with that. But and here's the thing. It seems like there's some frustration within the ranks on the left. Our very own Sack of Durbin, the senior senator from Illinois, chastising Nancy Pelosi for being unwilling to call the $750 billion bipartisan consensus relief package that does not include $160 billion or so for states and localities is what has been proposed, the $750 billion deal. Is that the least worst we're going to get?
So there's a really important lesson here. Really, you know, in what's going on in the Democratic Party, people should be paying attention to this. Dan and Amy, you and I have been talking about this for months and months and years. The Democratic Party is the party that cares about government. They care much more about government employees than they do about private sector employees. And by the way, private sector employees were much more likely to be laid off than government officials. Most government officials aren't even working and they're still getting paid. So this tells you about the difference between the two parties. This is why the single group that voted more than any other group for Joe Biden, do you know which group that was?
Public sector employees.
Government employees. They're like 92%. The deep state is real, folks. These are, you know, pretty liberal people. But here's my problem with this. And we're enabling these governors and mayors. We're enabling them by writing them big checks. You know, it's like you don't give an alcoholic another drink.
Right. Well, you'd be happy to know that our governor yesterday announced $700 million in cuts to executive branch agencies.
Sure.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Sure.
But, I mean, at least sure. the most secure job they have is a government job. Yeah. So now we're 9 months in, and they're finally, you know, people are
finally
starting to
tighten
the budget.
You know, and New York's having to do that, too. Here's my solution to Illinois' problem. My friend Andy Andrzejewski, you guys know him. He runs OpenTheBooks.com. He knows where all the waste and fraud and abuse is.
Yeah.
Make him the governor. Make him the economic staff. He can find the cuts, and you don't need $10 billion.
You're going to cut your way out of $250 billion in unfunded pension liabilities.
Well, you got to start somewhere, Dan.
No chance. That is like bailing out the Titanic with a teaspoon. It is structural. That's a joke. That's nice and that's cute, but that is not serious. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that at all.
Oh, come on. He's identified.
It's fine. I know. Waste, fraud, and abuse. I mean, blah, 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 blah. That is child stuff. I mean, honestly, that is children's stuff, kindergarten stuff. I've been around in Illinois too long to listen to that siren song.
Okay,
sorry.
So how are you going to do it, Dan? How are you going to balance the budget?
You're not going to balance the budget. You're not going to. And until you want to confront the reality of stopping the phony baloney accounting, there's no such thing. It's not possible to balance the budget because there's no way to come up with the cuts or the taxes to fund the liabilities in real time. So unless you want to make structural changes, then all you're doing is managing the orderly going out of business sale for Illinois. And don't delude yourself into thinking you're doing anything else.
Well, then you're talking about a bankruptcy, and I'm in favor
of
that. I mean, Illinois declared bankruptcy, and creditors are, you're not going to get a dollar for elder. You know, people who invested in all these Chicago municipal bonds and the Chicago, you know, education, you know, teachers unions bonds, they should not be made whole. They made the investments, and they made the stupid investments, thinking somebody would bail them out. And I think it is time for states like New York and Illinois to say, hey, you know what, we're bankrupt. You people, you know, lent us money. You know, you're pretty stupid for doing that.
Look, I agree, but I wanted to get your answer on is the $750 billion relief package that's on the table right now, which does not have, you know, money for states. Do you think that's the best we do, or should Trump just continue to hold out and turn the keys over?
I don't want Donald Trump leaving the White House with his last act. Another $1 trillion spending debt bill that's going to do nothing to revive our economy. No, folks, the stimulus is the Trump vaccine. It's rolling out there, and let's get our businesses open. Let's start rallying in the streets and force our politicians to do it and take down names and numbers of the politicians who've inflicted this on us and never allow them to be reelected again. But you people in Illinois, Dan, you people keep electing these folks. I mean, you're responsible.
Well, not for much longer. I'm following Larry Ellison and Lonsdorf and Musk to somewhere else. And it's not going
to
be Virginia, by the way, either. What's that?
Yeah, I know. Well, okay, it's going to be the Amy show then.
That's right. It's all up to Amy. I'm turning over all the responsibility to her. Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, economist, and Trumponomics author. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Okay, have a great time, guys. See ya.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It doesn't seem like anybody with oversight enforcement capacity pays much attention to these inspector general reports about abrogation of duty, malfeasance, or contracting, the area of contracting as well. So as much as we've focused, rightly so, on the conduct of the Federal Bureau of Investigations when it comes to their actual formal role of criminal investigations, the politicization of the upper echelons of the FBI under Jim Comey, and frankly, I think you could argue since, at least absent any significant reckoning within that agency for what we know per these Inspector General reports happened, now we have another layer, and that comes with your typical graft, allegedly, the sorts of things that you expect from government, generally speaking, also happen to apparently be taking place within the FBI, as if you know, their formal law enforcement duty problems weren't enough. Now we have this piece by Adam Mill over at amgreatness.com about the sort of pay-to-play politics you would expect in Chicago. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Adam Mill, an attorney specializing in labor and employment and public administration law, contributor to TheFederalist.com, AmGreatness.com, The Daily Caller. Adam, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan and Amy, and thank you for all that you guys do.
Well, so tell us about Tuva, this company named Tuva, and how it works as a vendor to the FBI. And I make the case, as you did in your piece in amgreatness.com, that maybe we should just turn these agencies formally over to mobsters, because at least it would be more honest, and a more honest presentation to the American people.
Yeah, I got interested in this idea because I used to be a Sopranos fan. I watched The Sopranos, and it always fascinated me how Tony Soprano would make his money, but, you know, try to avoid getting caught. And one of his schemes was that he would consult with these waste management companies. And in fact, there was this really cool episode when he was told by his lawyer, hey, you need to actually start showing up to these companies if you're going to collect consulting fees, because people are starting to get wise to the fact that you're getting paid fees, but you're not working, you're not consulting, you're not even showing up in the office. Of course, when he shows up, he finds that his office has been used for storage for years because he hasn't seen the inside of that office in years. And so in the government, they've tried to implement all these rules so that if an agency does hire a consulting firm, or they hire someone to for a services contract, and there's not going to be a building or a bridge or, you know, something you can look at afterwards. It's just going to be, oh, yeah, he gave me advice. And with, you know, they're paid on an hourly basis. Then there needs to be some kind of tangible proof that you don't have a Tony Soprano situation. So that's what this inspector general looked into. His name is Horowitz. And I'll tell you, this guy seems to be the only thing standing between Department of Justice going completely to the wolves, because it's the only thing that Department of Justice and the FBI seem to fear, is this inspector general who can actually publish a public report and embarrass the FBI if they're still capable of being embarrassed. So he looked into this contract. It was this huge, gargantuan, $60 million contract for basically consulting and personal services to this company that was supposedly owned by an Alaskan native. You know, it was a, they invoked this program that's supposed to help historically
disadvantaged business, groups. Right?
Right, like Alaskan natives and you know, African Americans and that sort of thing. And
sure. So get an Inuit Eskimo as a front man for, you know, a bunch of retired FBI agents to make money, right?
That's that's the inference I'm drawing from that report. That's exactly right. So what there's this regulation called the Federal Acquisition Regulation, and it specifically tries to prevent a Tony Soprano kind of situation by forcing the government to work through a contracting officer, a contracting officer's representative. And then they're supposed to verify that before the money goes out the door, that these companies are actually performing work. But in this case, the FBI did a little neat trick. What they did is they made the work that was supposedly being done classified, but they didn't give a classified rating to the contracting officer or the representatives. So they would get these invoices, and then basically they'd be looking at a sheet that, you know, didn't say anything about what these people supposedly did, and they would just pay them. They would just, oh, okay, you're claiming 20 hours at the rate of X number of dollars per hour. That's been going on for 4 years, and they have claimed close to $48 million, perhaps even more, for just what appears to be a few dozen people working. And just as you said, Dan, a lot of these people are retired law enforcement. Now, the OIG didn't specifically say they were retired FBI, but they were hired based upon their supposed experience. A lot of these people are recent retirees. Some of them had just retired within a year or so.
To do what? What are they supposed to do?
What's their job responsibility?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, what is it that they're supposed to do? And Horowitz, what he found was that the scope of works for these task orders that would get issued would be so vague that you couldn't really verify. It was, you know, a Tony Soprano kind of situation. You couldn't really verify that they were doing any work at all. So what we have here is a contract that, like, looking from the outside in, it really looks like a Tony Soprano consulting arrangement, a sweetheart deal for people who used to work for the FBI, used to work for federal law enforcement. They go get retired. They get out. They sign on with this company. And then apparently they're not kept busy enough by this supposed work they're doing. So they all have, a bunch of them have second jobs. They're all moonlighting for different organizations. They're supposed to have reported that to the FBI. Many of them didn't. They're flying to other countries. They're supposed reporting that to the FBI.
You know, this sort of federal graft, somebody should investigate that. Maybe, I don't know, but is there an agency that would investigate this sort of federal graft? I don't know.
Well,
do you know
that's
of one?
Exactly. I mean, I think Dan, that's a great point. And the thing is that the position of the Department of Justice and, you know, the FBI is actually a subordinate division of the DOJ, allows them to block and protect investigations into their own people. They can take care of their own. And you can go back and read these OIG reports. You've got members of the DOJ taking money from the confidential informants. You've got them cheating on their taxes. You've got them, download. There was just a report that came out Monday about a U.S. An attorney for the U.S. Attorney's Office was keeping a cache of porn for easy access at his office, and using his government computer. And almost always, these individuals are allowed to resign anonymously if anything happens to them at all. Very frequently, nothing happens to them, and then there's no prosecution. Prosecution is almost always declined if the person committing the crime either worked for the FBI or the Department of Justice.
Maybe they can get a job as a TA with Peter Strzok over at Georgetown.
Right, and I mean, you know, we have to be so grateful for the OIG. Peter Strzok, those emails came to light. We learned Peter Strzok's name from the department, from the OIG department. We would never know because the FBI and DOJ just completely ignore requests from Congress for information. They routinely invoke all of these ongoing investigation privileges if there's a Freedom of Information Act request or if they're sued. They just seem to be completely above any kind of accountability. They say, oh, well, we are accountable to the Constitution. We're not accountable to the president or Congress. But then they don't follow the Constitution at all. They violate FISA. They violate court orders regarding how to surveil Americans. They blow off the president when the president says you need to produce documents, and then they, of course, you know, thumb their noses at Congress when Congress asks for documents. But this Horowitz seems to have the magic spell to try and get information out of them. I would be very concerned if there's a move to dislodge him with the incoming Biden administration, because if he goes and they change the culture there, and we have what we have over in the intelligence community where almost nothing ever comes out of their inspector general, then it's just Katie bar the door. I mean, these contracts and these corrupt activities, there's going to be nobody exposing it.
Yeah, so there'll be more companies like Tuva. Speaking of Tuva, are they still in business? Are they still operational?
I tried to do a little bit of research on that, and I wasn't able to come up with an answer to that question. But as far as I could tell from reading the report, there's still one more option year left to exercise by the FBI. So, you know, they can keep the gravy train rolling for one more year and use up the rest of that $60 million in capacity that they got to pay people for whatever it is they're doing.
Well, it's good to be documented, but I should both the inspector general and then people like you writing about it. But I suppose we shouldn't be surprised when you're not held to account other than by your own standards that can shift as your interests shift. Then the sort of abuse we saw from Jim Comey and Andy McCabe and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, this is just a different form of that abuse. If I'm on if there's no accountability, I might as well enrich myself while I'm sort of prosecuting my political agenda through my official responsibilities as well, right? I mean, this is the whole problem with the lack of accountability in the federal government as well, writ large, and the and that accountability taking the form of a reckoning for bad actors and discernible bad acts. This doesn't come, so I might as well, you know, behave like some Chicagoland school superintendent where I retire and then I immediately get a contract for as much as I was making as a full-time employee, so I get it on both ends.
Yeah, and I think that you're making an excellent point. It's not that the FBI and DOJ has bad apples. It's that nothing happens to the bad apples, and that these bad apples are, you know, in very senior positions, and they're setting examples for the rest of the organization. So when you see a side hustle like this Tuva consulting contract that doesn't have any accountability, you have to ask yourself, you know, does this help us understand why the FBI doesn't seem curious at all about some of these other side hustles that are problematic, you know, side hustles with
right.
consulting with Ukrainian firms and side
right.
hustles with nonprofit organizations that somehow manage to be able to book appointments with the Secretary of State when you make your donation.
You protect my inside deal, I protect your inside deal. We all get rich and then we retire to, you know, someplace where we don't have to deal with the hoi polloi. Perfect.
Isn't that why Trump really got impeached? Isn't that the real
yes.
reason why he got impeached? Is that he messed with the side hustle?
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. Adam Mill, attorney specializing in labor, employment, and public administration law, contributor to The Federalist, amgreatness.com, where you can check out his piece that we were discussing, and I'll tweet it out as well, and The Daily Caller. Adam Mill, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Oh, I love this music.
Does that come with the pajamas as well?
That's exactly. Pajamagram, man. You get it all.
Let's take a call or two in response to our conversation with Adam Mill about the FBI. Vince in Crystal Lake.
Hey, couldn't the president just fire everybody at the FBI and the CIA?
Well, I don't think
you need to. I thought it was the executive branch.
You're right about that. I don't think you need to fire everybody, but a good start would be Christopher Wray. I'll tell you that. Thanks for the call, Vince. You know, maybe you could go coach Illinois football. They seem to have no standards for accountability or performance either.
Yeah, now they're without a coach. Lovey's gone.
Ah, I heard. The Lovey is over in Champaign.
No Lovey for you.
Stephen Huntley.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. And, you know, I haven't given up the fight on this election. And I go out there every day talking to people who are just, you know, in the trenches against Trump and looking into stuff. But I lose the fight because I can't precisely articulate the points. Is there a good source that I can go to get, you know, a good list of talking points and information?
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy.
Just take notes. Yeah. Get the bullet points you need.
I mean, right.
Can you tweet it out?
Yeah. No, thanks for the call, Steve. I mean, you know, I obviously Trump tweets out some version of the talking points. You can, you know, I don't know if there's a specific resource that I could direct people to, but I mean, you know where this is at right now. Basically, where the Trump campaign is at is they're in Mo Brooks land. Mo Brooks and maybe a couple other members of the House, Republican members of the House, that want to challenge the vote when it's their turn to count it on January 6th. And unless they can persuade a majority of their colleagues, at least one of their colleagues in the Senate, to even take up the issue, and a majority in both chambers, then I'm afraid at this point, barring some sort of court intervention, and there are still cases that are winding their way through the courts, you know, you're going to see a Joe Biden inaugurated on January 20th. That's where I think it's at.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning. Welcome back to Chicago's Morning Answer. And look, we here are proponents of law enforcement and respect the job that police officers do. We think it is folly to put the public on the side opposite law enforcement the way that the Jacobin left does, the pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, Black Lives Matter types do. It's idiocy. It's lunacy. We don't support the non-prosecution culture of Kim Fox and other Soros-funded district attorneys, state's attorneys. We don't support Democrat socialist politicians like Triple Threat, who appease the mob at the expense of the rule of law, who who are apologists for those who would do violence against the police and advocate such violence. But by the same token, police departments are government agencies. They're run by human beings. They make mistakes. They have a particularly important role in maintaining a free society, and they need to be held to account. And so when cases of police abuse arise that are high profile, we will tackle them as we have in the past, and we're going to right here. You know, how the police respond to cases where mistakes were made by police officers, really bad mistakes. And it doesn't necessarily need to include the loss of life, but it can include the loss of legitimacy among the public. They need to be addressed straight away. And so how the police departments, including but not limited to Chicago Police Department, handle those mistakes is important as well. And so the case of Anjanette Young. By the way, not just the police department, but City Hall, the administrative agencies, COPA, you know, all of the infrastructure that's been built around policing. So let's start with the police and the Anjanette Young case, which is 2 years old, by the way.
Right.
This raid is just coming to light because body cam footage was released over the objections of the legal department. The city went to federal court to prevent this body cam footage of police officers from being released, which is interesting for an administration that touts transparency and otherwise is normally antagonistic towards the police. You know, but then when it comes to dollars and cents, bottom line liability exposure, the lawyers take over. Well, here's what happened. Police busted down the door of a woman, a social worker named Anjanette Young, thinking that they had the address of this tip they got from a CI, confidential informant. But it turned out they were wrong.
Now, two-thirds of New York restaurants said they are likely to...
And I was undressing in my bedroom.
It was a cold February night, and Anjanette Young, a social worker, had just finished her shift at the hospital.
You see them running up to the apartment complex with the battering ram in their hand.
Chicago Police Social Work! Go.
A crowbar. It was so traumatic to hear the way the thing was hitting the door. And it happened so fast, I didn't have time to put on clothes.
And suddenly, she found herself frozen in fear. Completely naked. In a room full of men. 9 body cameras rolling.
And you're just standing there.
And I'm just standing there. I mean, terrified, humiliated, not even understanding why in that moment that this is happening to me.
And the first thing police reach for is not clothing. It's handcuffs.
There were big guns and guns with lights and scopes on them, and they were yelling at me, you know, put your hands up, put your hands up.
What are you thinking right now?
I just remember, you know, being so afraid. It's one of those moments where I just felt like that I could have died that night. If I had made one wrong move, I felt like they would have shot me. I truly believe that they would have shot me.
A police officer wraps a short coat around her shoulder, still leaving her front fully exposed. Even the sergeant in charge of the raid just stands there talking to her while she has nothing covering her.
And this goes on for 20 minutes. They busted into her house in search of a gun because that was the tip from the confidential informant. And she protested any number of times saying they had the wrong house. And, well, then they realized that they did have the wrong house.
We count it. She says it at least 43 times.
You got the wrong house!
And she was right. They were in the wrong house. Our investigation uncovered police failed to do the most basic research before getting the search warrant approved. We found they simply took the word of an informant who gave them Anjanette Young's address. The informant claimed a 23-year-old man who was a known felon had a gun and ammo inside.
The body cam shows a couple officers go outside and they look at the paperwork, and one makes a comment to the other, essentially like, there's something wrong with this. Like,
yeah,
he didn't really get the, he did, we, there was a confusion about whether or not they got the warrant or the basis on what they got the warrant, but it sounds troubling. And then Savini, this is Dave Savini reporting for CBS News. And of course he's unnecessarily sensationalizing it because that's what these clowns do. But the underlying reporting is good. I have to concede the point. And he makes the point of how easy it was to get the right address because the guy they were looking for was not far away and should have been a known quantity.
So where was the target? Our investigation revealed he was awaiting trial on home confinement here at a different apartment in Anjanette. Would it have been to locate him? Easy. Real easy. Because he was wearing a police tracking device.
In an ankle bracelet, and he was living next door.
No excuse for that.
Here is
a terrible situation.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. You know where this is going next. Anjanette Young is a black woman. Her attorney, a guy named Keenan Salter, had this to say about this incident.
If this had been a young woman in Lincoln Park by herself in her home, naked, a young white woman, let's just be frank, if the reaction would have been the same. I don't think it would have been. I think they would have saw that woman, rightfully so, as someone who was vulnerable, someone who deserved protection, someone who deserved to have their dignity maintained. They viewed Ms. Young as less than human.
Now, one other point on this.
Do they serve a lot of warrants in Lincoln Park, or do they serve more warrants in Anjanette's neighborhood?
Well, what does that have to do? Is there more crime in Anjanette's neighborhood? Or is there more crime in Lincoln Park? Okay. The one other point here, Anjanette Young, importantly, she's not really antagonistic towards the police as a general rule. Listen to what she says.
The work is warranted. They need to do the work, but they need to do it right. They can't just callously do it and leave people's lives in ruins because they got it wrong.
Former police officer friend texted me, it's a terrible situation. But when we do these, Amy, every person says you have the wrong house.
No, I understand that. Look, here's the thing. No. It's not what she said. And it's not even them handcuffing her as soon as they break in, because you want to make sure that that person in the house is not going to harm police. So I understand that, too. A little slow to cover her up from the body cam
I
saw, number one. So I understand that. But so there was an underlying problem with apparently the due diligence to make sure they had the wrong house. You're going to come in with nine guys.
When you come in guns a-blazing, you better make sure and double-check you have the right house.
And number two, again, 20 minutes is not that long a time. It seemed like an eternity for her, and I appreciate that it did. It was terrible what she was put through. But to figure out that, you know what, she's right, we made a mistake. Here's the other problem, though. This is 2 years ago, and the city tried to stop the body cam video from coming out. You know, if you want to be held in esteem, what's the best way to do that when you inevitably make a mistake? Because
own the mistake.
Come out.
Say we made a horrible mistake.
Why did this take 2 years? Where is COPPA too? And all these, you know, these watchdogs on behalf of the citizen. What a joke. Why does this take 2 years? You know, it's everybody runs to cover their ass. Everybody listens to lawyers. They're trying to, oh, if you say something, if you admit anything, then this and that. You know what? Treat Ms. Young as a human being after the fact. I mean, I get the race hustle you're going to get from her attorney. Of course, they're going to put this through the racial prism. Everything is put through a racial prism in left-wing politics, and with left-wing politics that dominates the city. But you could have resolved. And by the way, this is also on, you know, all the way up to the fifth floor, too. Since Lori Lightfoot made her chops as, you know, a police reformer, this is all the way up to the fifth floor. You proactively engage. You announce to the public this happened, and we want you to know that in conjunction with the police department itself and the brass there, that when we make a mistake that is this egregious, we own the mistake, we volunteer that this mistake was made, we seek to do everything we can to provide available remedies to the mistake, whether it's compensation for the trauma, fixing her home back up, the door that they broke right away, and so on and so forth, that we took every step right away as soon as it was recognized that they made a mistake. They recognized they made a mistake that night, 20 minutes into it, and here we are two years later talking about it.
Well, then you're going to love this, because Mayor Lightfoot released a statement saying, today I became aware of an incident involving Miss Anjanette Young from February 2019, before I became mayor, and I saw a video today for the first time. I had no knowledge of either of the body cam video until today. I had a very emotional reaction.
Yeah, of course.
To what was
blah, 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 blah. I don't care about her emotions, honestly. She's such a political hack. She is somebody who eschews responsibility. I inherited this, blah, blah, blah. You know, the first thing I do.
Today.
No, the first thing that she does, what's the first thing she did? Cover my ass.
Right.
I'm not responsible because it happened before my watch, rather than address the substance of the issue. You're the police reformer. You made your chops. Your misconsent decree. The point is to say, whenever she became aware of it, whatever the truth is, I don't really care. That's what she says. That doesn't mean it's the truth. Whatever the truth is, whatever. Now everybody is aware of it because of this report. And so let me tell you what we're going to do and what we're going to do going forward. And by the way, I also want to hear from Chief Brown, and I also want to hear from COPPA, and I want to understand why it takes 2 years and a CBS investigation 2 years after the fact to provide some closure to this mistake that was made.
Well, since it is a COPPA investigation, she's going to have no further comment. I mean, she should be all over COPPA demanding what happened. Why did you drop the ball?
I want to comment from COPPA. We've had a difficulty talking to lawyers. And by the way, this includes FOP. FOP should say, absolutely, you can have those cops have legal representation, as they should. But you should be proactively looking to address this. Problem solve. Own mistakes, compensate for the mistakes, and everybody move on. It would do so much to advance the interests of public safety, of police standing, particularly in the black community. It was so much to damp down the idiotic media sensationalism you get. But instead, you play right into the hands of all the people that undermine the legitimacy of the police and thus the quality of public safety in the city.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
Joe in Tinley Park.
They could do it easier. They could just get the guy's car and let the air out of his tire and wait for him to start changing his tire. One policeman could arrest him. Remember a couple years ago they sent letters to all these warrants that said they won Bulls tickets, and they showed up and got arrested. Simple.
Yeah, okay. I mean, thanks for the culture. Right, okay, you can do that to some extent. You don't necessarily always have time to go into these elaborate ruses and hope people show up to some undisclosed location or wait for them to come out of their home. If you believe they're a violent felon with a weapon and ammo and they're intent on doing harm in the immediacy, I don't know all the particulars of the information that they got from their confidential informant. But again, that's the kind of stuff cannot happen and then go unaddressed for as long as it has gone unaddressed. That's the bottom line. So, yeah, we can talk about what could be done at the front end, but there's going to be a mistake made in some material way when you've got 13,000 police officers and you've got the volume of crime that they have to deal with in a city of 2.8 million people over the course of bad things are going to happen. How you handle those mistakes, those honest mistakes, which I think this was, is so important. And this has not been handled well all the way around. Chuck and Delavan.
Something bad happened to me, and this is an honest guy, true story. I'm looking for my I'm sorry from the Hinsdale Police Department and the DuPage County Police Department. May the 4th, 2017, Angie Merzen was killed and murdered in her house. I sold her a dozen eggs and some honey, and there was a text to me that she wanted some asparagus at the LaGrange Farmers Market. The next morning, May the 5th, 2017, 13 police officers came to my girlfriend's house. They had the doors all blocked. They made me go back inside her house. They made me take my clothes off. They took naked pictures of me. They DNA'd my mouth. They DNA'd my finger. And they DNA'd my private parts. This is the honest to God truth. And I'm waiting for them guys to say that they're sorry for what they did. I didn't murder the woman. It ended up being a black guy murdered some construction worker dude. Yep. That's a true story. And
thanks, Chuck. Sorry that happened to you. Bill in Cape Coral, Florida.
Yeah, these mistakes that are happening are going to continue to happen because of promotions, the way they do promotions. It's not done by the best qualified person. It's done by the identity of the person. They'll go down 1,500 on the list to get somebody that's an identity. If they're hooked up to the alderman makes the phone call. They say, get that guy down there or that woman down there. Our superintendent back then was playing around with all these women and promoting them. They're the ones who are now leading the people, the other police. They're not ashamed to take it a promotion because they had some fun with the superintendent.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.